You're listening to the sounds of Mars, as recorded by Perseverance, the Mars rover. Perseverance is performing 250 million miles away, in temperatures as low as minus 153 degrees Celsius, operating smoothly, with Castrol's liquid engineering in its veins and mechanisms. Castrol is proud to have been chosen by NASA, having worked in space for over 60 years. And everything we do in space goes into everything we do here on Earth. In this podcast series, we wanted to explore how advanced some places are on our own planet, places with machines that need similar Castrol products to those needed on Mars. We meet people and their machines who perform under some of our planet's most extreme conditions on land, sea, and air. People who undertake some of the most challenging missions as part of their job, every day.
With Fourmile, there's this sort of eerie quietness. Especially when you've done your burnout and then you're sat in your grid slot. You're waiting for the smoke to settle before the red lights come on. You really feel the adrenaline and the heart rate coming up. You realise you're just about to start a race. It's a very, very bizarre feeling. But then when the helmet goes on, it's like...
All five lights are on!
My name is Sam Bird. I'm 34 years old. I'm a racing driver in the FIA ABB Formula E Championship. The first time I drove a Formula E car, it was very strange. Really just sounded like I could hear wind rushing over my helmet and around my body. But then you become more attentive to noise and you become more aware of other noises around you. And you start to listen to the suspension, you can hear the tyre chirping over the surface, the rear wheels slipping as you break traction. You can hear the rear wheels sort of chattering again when you're braking and the rear axle is just about locking up. And these are all things that you actually use and utilise in Formula E driving all the time now.
I'm Gus Greensmith. I'm the WRC driver, or one of the WRC drivers for the M Sport Ford Rally Team, and I'm currently eighth in the world. I'm 24 and I already have ringing in my ears, so it's sometimes I don't like to hear the engine, and sometimes the most pleasant places to be are when you're in the middle of nowhere with no one and nothing, and hopefully not a lion, and you can just switch the engine off and you can just have 20 minutes before you have to leave. There was one last year in... going into the final stage of Rally Mexico, and we were in this huge valley surrounded by cattle, and we were just, all you could hear was the bells ringing off the cows to alert the farmers where they are, and the wind of an incoming thunderstorm. So you go to places like that and it's incredible, and then you can go to places like Arctic and you'll be in the middle of the day, stopped on your own with a big jacket on, and the only thing you can hear is the water thawing, the snow thawing from the trees and dripping into the snow below. So I pick up a lot of the more individual sounds to where we are in the world. I think that's what makes rallying very unique. It takes you to places you wouldn't usually go, to see things you wouldn't usually see, and environments you wouldn't intend to go to.
Formula E is like the world's fastest game of chess. You're always working out what the opposition might be doing, when they might be attacking, which means when would you be defending, where's your energy compared to them. Information is key in this championship, and this constant struggle of speed versus energy. And if somebody can balance the two well, then that person will go on and win the race or be very, very competitive. I've got earplugs in my ears where I can speak to the team, they can speak to me. The comms then goes through to the helmet with a microphone. I press a button on the steering wheel, I talk to them, and it's an open mic pretty much, so they can speak over the top of me, I can speak over the top of them. I have lost radio comms in a couple of races actually, and it's not very fun. You feel very vulnerable when you lose the ability to talk to your engineer because it's your one port of contact. It's almost like to the outside world, because I'm in this monocoque, this chassis, surrounded by walls with a helmet on, and there's only one person that can help me. I can help myself by driving well, but from the outside world, I can only communicate with one other. So I'm constantly on the phone asking for information, and he's trying to help me solve this puzzle that is a Formula E race. And he's trying to get me out of this place and try and make my way up the grid.
We go to very remote places of the world to access some of the best driving roads in the world, in all in pursuit of trying to go as quick as possible and win some tin cup at the end of it. You see pretty much every terrain that there is to offer. So we go to the Arctic Rally in Finland, which temperatures can be as cold as minus 30. Next on the calendar this year is Rally Greece, where temperatures are currently 45 degrees. So in the car, that's more like 65, 70. A huge contrast in temperatures, and then we have also a huge contrast in altitude. So we go to Mexico and we're over 2,000 meters high, and the engines have lost 30% of the power, and they're constantly working at the absolute maximum they can operate at. Such a hard rally to get right for reliability issues, because the punishment on the engine is so much because there's no air. And then we have the rallies like Kenya, which is incredibly rough, just meant to break the cars. And then we have stages like in Spain, where it's like a racetrack on the roads. And we have basically every single varying condition and surface type and temperature type and altitude type. And all of it going through different times of the year. So yeah, I'd say I probably prefer colder temperatures, because when we go to places like Greece, it's genuinely uncomfortable in the car. Every time we come back to service, my feet are in an ice bucket trying to stop them from burning and blistering. When it's hot in the car, it's not that comfortable. But then again, being stuck in a snowbank at minus 30 is not that nice either, especially when you're having to start your own fires to survive, which is a genuine thing at the Arctic Rally. Usually, if you crash on a rally, it can be anywhere between an hour to 3 to 5 hours, maybe, from being collected and rescued back to the service park. It's in the rules that we have to have fire-making materials in the car in case of being stuck in the snowbank, because 4 hours at minus 30 without adequate fire-making material or adequate clothes is life-threatening, as they call it. So we're forced to carry it in places. Things going wrong is a part of life. I can tell you all about it. I've made plenty of mistakes. But you just have to learn how to deal with them as efficiently as you can. A good example would be, I was leading Rally Turkey in 2019, and on the second to last stage, on the very last corner of the stage, I crashed over the finish line because I took my eyes off the road, misheard a pace knot, and crashed. Well, the first thing I thought was not, am I okay, is, holy Malcolm's going to beat the out of me when he sees me, because I'd done a lot of work with the car developing it. It was the brand new car. We wanted to see it win. In the morning, Malcolm said to me, just bring it home. You've got a big lead. You don't need to worry. Just bring it home. The first thing I thought when I was in that ditch was, how am I going to get this out and save my own ass? In a ditch upside down, we had to fix all the electrics, put the car back on its wheels, get it somehow out of this ditch, which looked impossible to get it out of, and then fix the car in the road section, and then secure all the electrics going into the final stage. And we managed to do all that with couples of minutes to spare, and then win the rally. And when you look back at it, you do go into panic, but I would say that day was a fairly efficient panic, because everything was done in the right order, right steps. Like I said, too many F words, but eventually we got the car out.
I've got the hopes of the team resting on my shoulders, and I want to do well not only for myself but for the team, because I understand just how much work has gone into the project and how much everybody here wants it. There is certainly a responsibility on my shoulders in order to deliver, and there's a lot riding on my performances, and there is pressure with that, but you can't let that affect you. And like I said, the only pressure that I really feel is the pressure that I put on myself to perform. Success isn't a straight line road. It's not from down the bottom to up the top, and you don't just draw a line. There's victories, there's losses, there's points where you're high, there's points where you're low, there's times where you think, why am I doing this? Why am I putting in so much effort and getting nothing back? There's times where it's absolute elation and celebration. So, you know, to anybody that wants to achieve something in life, they need to understand that it's not just a clean path to victory. You've got to go through some bad times. Sometimes you've got to walk through fire to get to where you need to be. But when you get there, it feels amazing.
You're listening to the Castrol on Mars podcast series. Everything we do in space goes into everything we do here on Earth. Castrol is proud to be working alongside racing teams, drivers and mechanics across the world, pushing technological advancement. Find out more at castrol.com/onmars.